Good evening and welcome to the show.
I've got a feeling it's going to be a good one this week.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Will whoever's feeling around inside my snack supplies please stop?
Oh, I'll pack it.
I'm not sure that was a snack you grabbed there. It looked more like a lump of pocket fluff.
While Mr. Rochburns washes his mouth out, I suppose we really ought to get on with the headlines. Bong! Discarded handgun located.
Cryopod recovered from Eden. Defrosting commences.
The Rotters are being naughty at the community goals.
Crew members in double dip controversy.
Commander Overlight in chronic auto refrigeration crisis.
And I can't tell whether Hutton's in crisis or not, but I'll read out the numbers.
Commander Chuck Handgun, the once official voice of the Pilots Federation and known for his dramatic exit from Shinrata Desra last cycle, which involved a press release, a sarcastic salute, and a slow roll towards the toast rack, has resurfaced in a new role, this time as Chief Communications Officer at an organization known only in public records as Pixel Helix. Pixel Helix, an independent sector consultancy specializing in the promotion of interactive simulation environments, appears to have attracted not only Handgun, but several other former Pilots Federation operatives. Official records list their mission profile as Engagement and Narrative Alignment, which sources interpret to mean making cool things look even cooler and telling everyone about it, but louder. Handgun's new title, however, has caused a mild ripple of controversy. The designation of Chief Communications Officer, when transmitted across certain comms arrays, has reportedly caused confusion in sectors familiar with the 31st century First Nations, where the titled Chief Communications Officer is traditionally reserved for spiritual leaders who commune with the Great Signal and interpret the will of the void via long-range bandwidth fluctuations and the occasional singing rock.
We're not saying he isn't qualified,
said Bouncing Moose, communications oracle of the Pan-Magnetic Bandwidth Lodge.
But traditionally, our chiefs don't spend quite so much time writing press releases or wearing suits.
When asked for comment, a spokesperson for Pixel Helix replied simply,
yes, he's the Chief Communications Officer. Yes, it's a title. No, we're not appropriating anything sacred. But if the Great Signal wants to promote a trailer next quarter, we're open to collaborations. Don't forget to like and follow.
Commander Handgun himself has been unavailable for comment, though observers have noted a marked improvement in haircut, posture, and footwear since leaving his previous post. Industry insiders report that he's currently involved in the promotion of a range of new generation simulations, some of which reportedly contain both laser guns and explosions, though not necessarily in that order. The Pilots Federation has issued no formal statement on the matter, although there are rumours of a commemorative plaque being installed in the Shinrata staff kitchen, reading, "He left on purpose." Further updates will follow if Handgun attempts to ascend to a new role involving the words Grand, High, or Galactic.
The recently discovered and reported upon cryogenic survival capsule recovered from beneath the surface of Eden has been safely transported to Hutton Orbital and secured in a temporary isolation bay adjacent to the backup gallery storage and slightly downstream of the station's primary coolant sump. Recovery teams reported that there were thankfully no breaches in its containment during transit. Structural scans remain consistent with a Type 3 pre-frameshift class stasis module. Cylindrical, reinforced, and marked with corrosion patterns indicative of several centuries of subsoil conditions, preceded by an atmospheric entry and, of course, a rather bumpy crash landing. Thermal buffering systems within the unit appear to have remained intermittently functional, though internal temperature stability was described as variable. Preliminary external scans conducted on arrival have confirmed the presence of organic material inside the pod. Life sign, cryotelemetry, has suggested that there were two discrete biological signatures, one exhibiting characteristics broadly consistent with baseline human physiology. The second is markedly smaller and has prompted speculation ranging from a companion animal to everything from passive biological contamination, xenomorphs, something that evolved from the ship's cat but is definitely not Danny John Jules shaped, and even a pot plant. A station-wide review of xenobiological quarantine protocols has been initiated as a precaution. Flamethrowers, high-powered versions of Aphelion rifles, and even a number of stun grenades have been placed in convenient and handy locations throughout the station concourse nearest the containment unit. Hutton Engineering staff, under the supervision of architect Leo Wolf and an on-guard and as ever attentive mop-wielding maintenance operative, have commenced a controlled defrost cycle. A decommissioned industrial oven formerly employed in the preparation of tactical field rations has been employed, and the unit connected to the defrost socket has been at a temperature of 37 degrees for 4 hours. For members of the remnants of the Merkin people of old Earth, that's 98.6 bald eagles per hamburger. Containment remains sealed. Visual feeds show minor condensation within the pod, and intermittent movement is consistent with internal thawing. No audible communication has been detected, though proximity sensors indicate increased internal activity. Hutton medical personnel have confirmed that the second life form does not currently resemble a face-hugging parasite, a chest-bursting organism, or anything listed in the Class 7 containment manual under incisive emergence hazards. Analysis is ongoing, but current consensus leans towards a microbiological classification. The capsule will remain under observation until defrosting completes. Further updates will be issued once it's safe to breach the seal.
With the recent resurgence of combat-focused community goals, station authorities are once again contending with an increasingly common nuisance. Commanders participating in sieges have reported long delays at key docking stations, not due to traffic volume, but because of what is now widely known as pad hogging. The practice of landing, remaining parked indefinitely, and treating a functional docking bay as a personal real estate. The issue is particularly acute in systems involved in power play conflicts, where the strategic delay of opposition forces is being openly discussed in back and front channels. By occupying the limited large landing pads, certain commanders appear to be intentionally preventing rival pilots from handing in combat bonds in a timely fashion, thereby manipulating the CG scoreboard in real time. Or at least that's what's being claimed all over the galactic forums. Though from what we can tell, it's a bit of a storm in a teacup.
It's not subtle, and it's not new,
said Felicity Tram, operations clerk at Reed's Rest.
But it has reached a point where tactical pad occupancy is now an established PvP strategy. We've had commanders land, switch off their engines, and proceed to have a snack, a shower, and an extended trip to the loo with a copy of the Sunday Times.
Multiple incidents have been logged where pads remained occupied for periods exceeding 30 minutes with the ships entirely inactive. Attempts to hail the pilots were met with silence, autoresponder loops, or vague assertions about needing to sort their hard points out. Within the Pilots Federation's so-called open flight mode, a secondary conflict has erupted, not between ships, but between players of etiquette. Public message boards are awash with naming and shaming of alleged pad hogs, followed swiftly by moderator action against the shamers on the basis that such naming usually targets the sorts of people who engage in unsolicited PvP.
This is why I stay in solo,
remarked Commander Levan Starch, overheard in a queue outside Gresley Dock.
At least that way, if I'm delayed, it's only because I forgot to restock and had to log out to have a cry.
Station controllers have confirmed they are powerless to forcibly eject dock vessels without initiating a full breach protocol. One system is experimenting with passive-aggressive tannoy loops, featuring subtle personal criticisms, but early results suggest that the culprits simply turn down the volume and resume reading. Suggestions have been made to implement automated docking timers, escalating fines, or enforced pad rotation. These remain under consideration, pending a full risk assessment and the availability of a suitably sarcastic-sounding announcer. Lael Wolf has issued a short internal memo reminding Hutton pilots that combat bans are not valid unless delivered, pads are not private property, and hovering with your nose over the pad while just checking your power distributor is not a recognised flight mode. For now, commanders are advised to conduct their business swiftly, vacate the bay, and resist the temptation to use the ship's mass as a tool of psychological warfare.
An interstellar financial audit has revealed widespread abuse of a bond payment processing loophole, allowing hired ship-launched fighter pilots to claim duplicate combat bond payouts, a practice now officially classified as double-dipping. The scandal came to light after Commander Graxor conducted a routine ledger review and was startled to discover that his crew member, the notably well-compensated Harleen Reynolds, had received significantly more income from combat operations than expected.
I nearly dropped my mug,
Graxor stated in his formal report. Well, we're paraphrasing.
She never even launched. She just lounges in the crew area, which is normal, that's fine. But she was getting two cuts of every bond. Twice the pay, once for showing up, and once for continuing to do so,
they might have said. The current bond system, implemented by various interfaction authorities, already assumes crew are entitled to a fixed percentage of combat bonds regardless of actual deployment. What has raised concern is a duplication error. Under specific conditions, crew appear to receive one share as hired crew and another erroneously recorded under a secondary classification, effectively billing commanders twice for the same engagement. According to the Bureau of Operational Financial Fairness, BOF, the issue may have gone unnoted for some time, due to the sheer scale of commander wealth problems in modern operations, with individual engagements frequently yielding tens or hundreds of millions of credits. Even large discrepancies are easily overlooked.
This isn't petty theft. This is procedural embezzlement.
Said Enrique Bastor Tibbs, lead bond reconciliation analyst at BOF.
It is beneath layers of acceptable laziness. The crew are contractually permitted to do nothing, but they've accidentally discovered how to get paid for it. Twice. It's a freeloader's dream.
The name, double dipping, has stirred linguistic and diplomatic confusion. In Federation etiquette circles, it refers to the frowned-upon biscuit redunking, one that risks both social exclusion and structural collapse of the biscuit. Within the Empire, it refers to the act of revisiting the chocolate fondue medium with your little piece of strawberry once it has already been coated, a behaviour once described by the Duchess of Everterne as
the kind of lapse that starts revolutions.
Reynolds, whose earnings over a single week briefly outpaced her commanding officers, has not commented publicly. However, station logs confirm she recently requested access to the executive lounge and made inquiries into pre-orders of her own Panther Clipper, which, of course, opens up an entirely new scandal, as NPC crews have had access to them for years. The Pilots Federation has released a short bulletin advising all commanders to audit their crew accounts,
review combat payout records, and verify that their trusted companions are not, in fact, raking in double their negotiated cut without lifting a finger.
I've nothing against paying my crew,
said Denzel Vortigern Crunch, an independent pilot operating out of LTT 9455.
But if someone's getting 20% of my income while playing Space Sudoku in the lounge, I'd at least like them to pretend they're sweating.
The accounting fix is expected to be deployed shortly. In the meantime, crew contracts are under formal review, and payment protocols are being revalidated to prevent further occurrences.
Manda Overlight, long-serving Hutton trucker and chronic sufferer of positive cryesthesia, has confirmed that the current outbreak of artificial summer aboard Sol 3 configured stations has brought welcome relief from his usual condition, being far too cool. Cryesthesia is commonly associated with hypersensitivity to cold, normally requires mitigation strategies such as layering, avoidance of ice worlds, and never standing too close to the Hargo hatch. In Overlight's case, it manifests as a persistent, involuntary coolness, both thermally and in appearance, throughout most of the year.
I don't need to try,
he explained, stepping out of his bright red mamba, the Zap Brannigan, with his shirt half buttoned.
It just happens. Doors open themselves. People buy me drinks. I have to live with it. It's not easy being this low temperature.
Whilst most commanders spend the year chasing combat bonds or rare goods, Overlight has to battle cabin chill, unwanted admiration, and the psychological consequence of walking in stylish slow motion everywhere. Relief comes only during artificial summer, where stations and ships aligned with the Northern Hemisphere Sol 3 configuration boost their environmental temperatures, increase simulated humidity, and play background audio that includes birdsong and the distant clink of barbecues. This allows Overlight to relax in a brief period of relative thermal and social normality, including Hawaiian shirts, socks with flip-flops, and coloured drinks served with novelty fruit. He reportedly keeps a separate suitcase marked Summer Loadout. The situation is not consistent across the bubble. Stations configured to the southern hemisphere of Sol 3 seasonal alignment continue to enforce the colder conditions during this period.
Every time I visit Hobbit Orbit Terminal,
Overlight added,
now I feel the overwhelming need to open beer bottles with my bare hands and point double finger guns at people while winking.
What a terrifying thought. Summer protocols are expected to remain active until late September. After that, Overlight will return to full coolness, involuntary slow walking, and a personal temperature profile last measured at Alpine.
This is a Hutton Orbital News emergency update. We have received confirmation of a containment breach on Deck 4C within the temporary cryogenics defrosting suite. Emergency biohazard protocols were triggered approximately 8 minutes ago, but due to a cross-signal fault with the station's broadcast system, the alarms were unfortunately set to silent mode.
Hang on, where exactly is the cryogenics suite here at Hutton?
On the upper rotunda.
Which one?
The upper one.
That's this one.
Somebody check a schematic. Where are they taking this thing?
Emergency teams are currently relocating the cryopod to the nearest secure, lockable location. Based on available internal navigation data and ongoing communications with security, it appears that the pod is en route to a service corridor adjacent to the broadcast studio.
Guys, the nearest lockable door is the one between the studio and the green room.
Hutton Orbital News would like to reassure everyone that the situation is under control. Though the breach triggered automatic relocation procedures, the pod remains externally sealed and under manual containment. There is, at this time, no confirmation of hostile biological material. However, in light of its current trajectory, the Hutton Orbital Radio team would like to issue the following advisory. This is a Hutton Orbital News emergency broadcast. Can someone please tell the emergency response team that we're on air and under no circumstances should they bring that thing in here?
Flossie, you have got your pan handy just in case, haven't you?
Further updates will be provided as the situation unfolds.
Welcome to the Hutton BGS bit, where we pour glitter and talcum powder into a birthday card, hand it to the Situation Room Supervisor, and then switch all the fans on. This week, your booms are in Riga, Corsis Sector DL-YD133, Swoims ZI-FC10, Swoims EP-D-C1-18, HIP 49859, Barnard Star, 36 Ophiuchi, Delta 1 Camulontis, LHS 3356, LTT 7072, Leighton 143-23, and the Renses. We are at war with the Leighton 347-14 prison colony in LaSalle 8760. There's an election in HIP 48959 with the co-op of Omana. Call 285 sector HY-Y C14-17 sees Hutton in election with the HIP 95973 Progressive Party. And we are against Sol Workers Party for an election in Wolf 1061. Now, that's a lot of things, and you're probably wondering what it all means. Well, if you want to truck it, then get yourself over to one of those boom systems. If you want to mission run, then head to HIP 48959, Wolf 1061, or call 285 sector HY-Y space C14-17 and run missions for Hutton to help with those elections. And if you want to shoot it, then you'll have to go somewhere else. There's an outbreak of peace in Hutton systems, but don't worry, it won't last. And that's it for this week's Hutton BGS bit.